The walls were beautifully decorated. Even Rincewind noticed this, though they went past in a blur. Some had marvellous birds painted on them, or mountain scenes, or sprays of foliage. Every leaf and bud done in exquisite detail with just a couple of brush strokes. Ceramic lions reared on marble pedestals. Vases bigger than Rincewind lined the corridors. Lacquered doors opened ahead of the guards. Rincewind was briefly aware of huge, ornate and empty rooms stretching away on either side. Finally, they passed through yet another set of doors, and he was flung down on a wooden floor. In these circumstances, he always found it was best not to look up. Eventually, an officious voice said,
"What do you have to say for yourself, miserable louse?"
"Well, I..."
"Silence."
Ah, so it was going to be that kind of interview. A different voice, a cracked, breathless and elderly voice, said,
"Where is the Grand Vizier?"
"He has retired to his rooms, O Great One. He said he had a headache."
"Summon him at once."
"Certainly, O Great One."
Rincewind, his nose pressed firmly to the floor, made some further assumptions. Grand Vizier was always a bad sign. It generally meant that people were going to suggest wild horses and red-hot chains. And when people were called things like, "O Great One," it was pretty certain that there was no appeal.
"This is a rebel, is it?"
The sentence was wheezed rather than spoken.
"Indeed, O Great One."
"I think I would like a closer look."
There was a general murmur suggesting that a number of people had been greatly surprised, and then the sound of furniture being moved. Rincewind thought he saw a blanket on the edge of his vision. Someone was wheeling a bed across the floor.
"Make it stand up."
The gurgle in the pores was like the last bathwater going down the plug hole. It sucked as wetly as an outgoing wave. Once again, a foot kicked Rincewind in the kidneys, making its usual explicit request in the Esperanto of brutality. He got up. It was a bed, and quite the biggest Rincewind had ever seen. In it, swathed in brocades and almost lost in pillows, was an old man. Rincewind had never seen anyone look so ill. The face was pale, with a greenish pallor. Veins showed up under the skin of his hands like worms in a jar. The Emperor had all the qualifications for a corpse, except, as it were, the most vital one.
"So, this is the new great wizard of whom we have read so much, is it?"
he said. When he spoke, people waited expectantly for the final gurgle in mid-sentence.
"Well, I..."
"Silence!"
screamed the Chamberlain. Rincewind shrugged. He hadn't known what to expect of an emperor, but the mental picture had room for a big fat man with lots of rings. Talking to this one was a hair's breadth from necromancy.
"Can you show us some more magic, great wizard?"
Rincewind glanced at the Chamberlain.
"Well,
silence!"
The Emperor waved a hand vaguely, gurgled with the effort, and gave Rincewind another inquiring look. Rincewind decided to chance things.
"I've got a good one," he said. "It's a vanishing trick."
"Can you do it now?"
"Only if everyone opens all the doors and turns their back."
The Emperor's expression did not change. The court fell silent. Then there was a sound like a number of small rabbits being choked to death. The Emperor was laughing. Once this was established, everyone else laughed too. No one can get a laugh like a man who can have you put to death more easily than he goes to the lavatory.
"What shall we do with you?"
he said.
"Where is the Grand Vizier?"
The crowd parted. Rincewind risked a sideways squint. Once you were in the hands of a Grand Vizier, you were dead. Grand Viziers were always scheming megalomaniacs. It was probably in the job description.
Are you a devious, plotting, unreliable madman? Ah, good. Then you can be my most trusted minister.
Ah, Lord Hong, said the Emperor.
Mercy? Suggested Rincewind.
Silence! Screamed the Chamberlain.
Tell me, Lord Hong, said the ancient Emperor, what would be the punishment for a foreigner entering the Forbidden City? Removal of all limbs, ears and eyes, and then allowed to go free,
said Lord Hong. Rincewind raised his hand. First offence, he said.
Silence!
We find, generally, that there is no second offence,
said Lord Hong.
What is this person?
I like him, said the Emperor.
I think I shall keep him. He makes me laugh.
Rincewind opened his mouth.
Silence!
Screamed the Chamberlain, perhaps unwisely in view of current thinking.
Could you stop him shouting silence every time I try and speak? Rincewind ventured.
Certainly, great wizard,
said the Emperor. He nodded at some guards.
Take the Chamberlain away and cut his lips off.
Great one, I...
And his ears also.
The wretched man was dragged away. A pair of lacquered doors slammed shut. There was a round of applause from the courtiers.
Would you like to watch him eat them?
Said the Emperor, grinning happily.
It's tremendous fun.
Said Rincewind.
A good decision, Lord,
said Lord Hong. He turned his head towards Rincewind. To the wizard's immense surprise, and some horror, too, he winked.
Oh, great one, said a plump courtier, dropping to his knees, bouncing slightly and then nervously approaching the Emperor. I wonder if perhaps it is entirely wise to be so merciful to this foreign devil.
The Emperor looked down. Rincewind could have sworn that dust fell off him. There was a gentle movement among the crowd. Without anyone apparently doing anything so gross as activating their feet, there was nevertheless a widening space around the kneeling man. Then the Emperor smiled.
Your concern is well received,
he said. The courtier risked a relieved grin. The Emperor added,
However, your presumption is not... Kill him slowly, over several days. Yes, indeed. Lots of boiling oil. An excellent idea, O Lord,
said Lord Hong. The Emperor turned back to Rincewind.
I am sure the great wizard is my friend,
he suctioned. Said Rincewind. He'd been in this approximate position before, gods knew. But he'd always been facing someone, well, usually someone who looked like Lord Hong, not a near corpse who was nearly so far round the bend he couldn't poke sanity with a long pole.
We shall have such fun,
said the Emperor.
I read all about you.
Said Rincewind. The Emperor waved a hand at the court again.
Now I will retire,
he said. There was a general movement and much ostensible yawning. Clearly no one stayed up later than the Emperor.
Emperor,
said Lord Hong wearily,
what will you have us do with this great wizard of yours?
The old man gave Rincewind the look a present gets around the time the batteries have run out.
Put him in the special dungeon,
he said.
For now.
Yes, Emperor,
said Lord Hong.
He nodded at a couple of guards. Rincewind managed a quick look back as he was dragged from the room. The Emperor was lying back in his movable bed, quite oblivious to him.
"Is he mad or what?" he said.
"Silence!"
Rincewind looked up at the guard who'd said that.
"A mouth like that could get a man into big trouble around here," he muttered.
Lord Hong always found himself depressed by the general state of humanity. It often seemed to him to be flawed. There was no concentration. Take the Red Army. If he had been a rebel, the Emperor would have been assassinated months ago, and the country would now be aflame, except for those bits too damp to burn. But these, despite his best efforts, their idea of revolutionary activity was a surreptitious wall poster saying something like, "Unpleasantness to oppressors when convenient." They had tried to set fire to guardhouses. That was good. That was proper revolutionary activity, except for the bit where they tried to make an appointment first. It had taken Lord Hong some considerable effort to see that the Red Army appeared to achieve any victories at all. Well, he'd given them the great wizard they so sincerely believed in. They had no excuse now. And by the look of him, the wretch was as craven and talentless as Lord Hong had hoped. Any army led by him would either flee or be slaughtered, leaving the way open for the counter-revolution. The counter-revolution would not be inefficient. Lord Hong would see to that. But things had to be done one step at a time. There were enemies everywhere, suspicious enemies. The path of the ambitious man was a nightingale flaw. One wrong step, and it would sing out. It was a shame the great wizard would turn out to be so good at locks. Lord Tang's men were guarding the prison block tonight. Of course, if the Red Army were to escape, no blame at all could possibly attach to Lord Tang. Lord Hong risked a little chuckle to himself as he strode back to his suite. Proof. That was the thing. There must never be proof. But that wouldn't matter very long. There was nothing like a fearsomely huge war to unite people. And the fact that the great wizard, that is, the leader of the terrible rebel army, was an evil foreign troublemaker, was just the spark to light the firecracker. And then, Ankh Morpork, urinating dog. Hung Hung was old. The culture was based on custom, the alimentary tract of the common water buffalo, and base treachery. Lord Hong was in favour of all three, but they did not add up to world domination, and Lord Hong was particularly in favour of that, provided it was achieved by Lord Hong. If I was the traditional type of Grand Vizier, he thought as he sat down before his tea table, I'd cackle with laughter at this point. He smiled to himself instead. Time for the box again? No. Some things were all the better for the anticipation. Mad Hamish's wheelchair caused a few heads to turn, but no actual comment. Undue curiosity was not a survival trait in Hung Hung. They just got on with their work, which appeared to be the endless carrying of stacks of paper along corridors. Cohen looked down at what was in his hand. Over the decades, he'd fought with many weapons. Swords, of course, and bows and spears and clubs and... Well, now he came to think of it just about anything. Except this.
"I still don't like it," said Truckle. "Why are we carrying pieces of paper?"
"Because no one looks at you in a place like this if you're carrying a piece of paper," said Mr. Savaloy.
"Why?"
"What?"
said Mad Hamish.
"It's a kind of magic."
"I'd feel happier if it was a weapon."
"As a matter of fact, it can be the greatest weapon there is."
"I know. I've just cut myself on my bit," said Boy Willie, sucking his finger. "What?"
"Look at it like this, gentlemen," said Mr. Savaloy. "Here we are, actually inside the Forbidden City, and no one is dead."
"Yes, that's what we're danging complaining about," said Truckle.
Mr. Savaloy sighed. There was something in the way Truckle used words. It didn't matter what he actually said. What you heard was in some strange way the word he actually meant. He could turn the air blue just by saying, "socks." The door slammed shut behind Rincewind, and there was the sound of a bolt shooting into place. The Empire's jails were pretty much like the ones at home. When you want to incarcerate such an ingenious creature as the common human being, you tend to rely on the good old-fashioned iron bar and large amounts of stone. It looked as though this well-tried pattern had been established here for a very long time. Well, he'd definitely scored a hit with the Emperor. For some reason, this did not reassure him. The man gave Rincewind the distinct impression of being the kind of person who was at least as dangerous to his friends as to his enemies. He remembered Noodle Jackson back in the days when he was a very young student. Everyone wanted to be friends with Noodle, but somehow, if you were in his gang, you found yourself being trodden on, or chased by the watch, or being hit in fights you didn't start, while Noodle was somewhere on the edge of things laughing. Besides, the Emperor wasn't simply at death's door, but, well, inside the hallway, admiring the carpet and commenting on the hat stand. And you didn't have to be a political genius to know that when someone like that died, scores were being settled before he'd even got cold. Anyone he'd publicly called a friend would have a life expectancy more normally associated with things that hover over trout streams at sunset. Rincewind moved aside a skull and sat down. There was the possibility of rescue, he supposed, but the Red Army would be hard put to it to rescue a rubber duck from drowning. Anyway, that had put him back in the clutches of Butterfly, who terrified him almost as much as the Emperor. He had to believe that the gods didn't intend for Rincewind, after all his adventures, to rot in a dungeon. No, he added bitterly, they probably had something much more inventive in mind. What light reached the dungeon came from a very small grill and had a second-hand look. The rest of the furnishing was a pile of what had possibly once been straw. There was a gentle tapping on the wall. Once, twice, three times. Rincewind picked up the skull and returned the signal. One tap came back. He repeated it. Then there were two. He tapped twice. Well, this was familiar. Communication without meaning. It was just like being back at Unseen University. Fine, he said, his voice echoing in the cell. Fine. Tray prisoner. But what are we saying? There was a gentle scraping noise, and one of the blocks in the wall very gently slid out of the wall, dropping onto Rincewind's foot.
Ah! What, big hippo?
Said a muffled voice. What?
Sorry.
What?
You wanted to know about the tapping code. It's how we communicate between cells, you see. One tap means...
Excuse me, but aren't we communicating now?
Yes, but not formally. Prisoners are not allowed to talk.
The voice slowed down, as if the speaker had suddenly remembered something important. Ah, yes, said Rincewind. I was forgetting. This is Hung Hung. Everyone obeys the rules. Rincewind's voice died away too. On either side of the wall there was a long, thoughtful silence.
Rincewind?
Two Flower?
What are you doing here? Said Rincewind. Rotting in a dungeon.
Me too.
Good grief! How long has it been? Said the muffled voice of Two Flower.
What? How long has what been?
But you! Why are you...
You wrote that damn book!
I just thought it would be interesting for people.
Interesting? Interesting?
I thought people would find it an interesting account of a foreign culture. I never meant it to cause trouble.
Rincewind leaned against his side of the wall. No, of course. Two Flower never wanted to cause any trouble. Some people never did. Probably the last sound heard before the universe folded up like a paper hat would be someone saying, "What happens if I do this?"
"It must have been fate that brought you here," said Two Flower.
"Yes, it's the sort of thing he likes to do," said Rincewind.
"You remember the good times we had?"
"Did we? I must have had my eyes shut."
"The adventures?"
"Oh, them. You mean hanging from high places, that sort of thing."
"Rincewind?"
"Yes, what?"
"I feel a lot happier about things now you're here."
"That's amazing."
Rincewind enjoyed the comfort of the wall. It was just rock. He felt he could rely on it.
"Everyone seems to have a copy of your book," he said. "It's a revolutionary document, and I do mean copy. It looks as if they make their own copy and pass it on."
"Yes, it's called Samizdat."
"What does that mean?"
"It means each one must be the same as the one before." "Oh, dear, I thought it would just be entertainment. I didn't think people would take it seriously. I do hope it's not causing too much bother."
"Well, your revolutionaries are still at the slogan and poster stage, but I shouldn't think that'll count for much if they're caught."
"Oh, dear.
How come you're still alive?
I don't know. I think they may have forgotten about me. That tends to happen, you know. It's the paperwork. Someone makes the wrong stroke with the brush, or forgets to copy a line. I believe it happens a lot.
You mean there's people in prison and no one can remember why?
Oh, yes.
Then why don't they set them free?
I suppose it's felt they must have done something. All in all, I'm afraid our government does leave something to be desired.
Like a new government?
Oh, dear. You could get locked up for saying things like that.
People slept, but the Forbidden City never slept. Torches flickered all night in the great bureau as the ceaseless business of empire went on. This largely involved, as Mr. Savaloy had said, moving paper. Six Beneficent Winds was a deputy district administrator for the Langtang district, and good at a job which he rather enjoyed. He was not a wicked man. True, he had the same sense of humour as a chicken casserole. True, he played the accordion for amusement, and disliked cats intensely, and had a habit of dabbing his upper lip with his napkin after his tea ceremony, in a way that had made Mrs. Beneficent Winds commit murder in her mind on a regular basis over the years. And he kept his money in a small leather shovel purse, and counted it out very thoroughly whenever he made a purchase, especially if there was a queue behind him. But on the other hand, he was kind to animals, and made small but regular contributions to charity. He frequently gave moderate sums to beggars in the street, although he made a note of this in the little notebook he always carried to remind him to visit them in his official capacity later on. And he never took away from people more money than they actually had. He was also, unusually for men employed in the Forbidden City after dark, not a eunuch. Guards were not eunuchs, of course, and people had got around this by classifying them officially as furniture. And it had been found that tax officials also needed every faculty at their disposal to combat the wiles of the average peasant, who had this regrettable tendency to avoid paying taxes. There were much nastier people in the building than Six Beneficent Winds, and it was therefore just his inauspicious luck that his paper and bamboo door slid aside to reveal seven strange-looking old eunuchs, one of them in a wheeled contrivance. They didn't even bow, let alone fall on their knees, and he not only had an official red hat, but it had a white button on it. His brush dropped from his hands when the men wandered into his office as if they owned it. One of them started poking holes in the wall and speaking gibberish.
"Hey, the walls are just made of paper. Hey, look, if you lick your finger, it goes right through, see?"
"I will call for the guards and have you all flogged,"
shouted Six Beneficent Winds, his temper moderated slightly by the extreme age of the visitors.
"What did he say?"
"He said he'd call for the guards."
"Oh, yes, please let him call for the guards."
"No, we don't want that yet. Act normally."
"You mean cut his throat?"
"I meant a more normal kind of normally."
"It's what I call normal."
One of the old men faced the speechless official and gave him a big grin.
"Excuse us, your supreme... oh dear, what's the word? Pushcart sail? Immense rock? Yes, venerableness. But we seem to be a little lost."
A couple of the old men shuffled around behind Six Beneficent Winds and started to read, or at least try to read, what he'd been working on. A sheet of paper was snatched from his hands.
"What's this say, Teach? Let me see... The first wind of autumn shakes the lotus flower, seven lucky logs to pay one pig, and three, looks like a four-armed man waving a flag of rice on pain of having his, rather a stylized thing here, can't quite make it out, struck with many blows. By order of Six Beneficent Winds, collector of revenues, Langtang." There was a subtle change among the old men. Now they were all grinning, but not in a way that gave him any comfort. One of them, with teeth like diamonds, leaned towards him and said, in bad Agatean,
"You're a tax collector, Mr. Knob on your hat."
Six Beneficent Winds wondered if he'd be able to summon the guard. There was something terrible about these old men. They weren't venerable at all. They were horribly menacing, and although he couldn't see any obvious weapons, he knew for a cold frozen fact that he wouldn't be able to get out more than the first syllable before he'd be killed. Besides, his throat had gone dry, and his pants had gone wet.
"Nothing wrong with being a tax collector," he croaked.
"'We never said that,' said Diamond Teeth. "'We always like to meet tax collectors.'
"'Some of our most favouritest people, tax collectors,' said another old man.
"'Saves a lot of trouble,' said Diamond Teeth.
"'Yeah,' said a third old man. "'Like it means you don't have to go from house to house "'killing everyone for their valuables. "'You just wait and kill the...
"'Gentlemen, can I have a word?' The speaker was the slightly goat-faced one that didn't seem quite so unpleasant as the others. The terrible men clustered around him, and six beneficent winds heard the strange syllables of a coarse foreign tongue.
"'What? But he's a tax collector! That's what they're for!'
"'What?'
"'A firm tax base is the foundation of sound governance, gentlemen. Please, trust me.'
I understood all of that up to a firm tax.
Nevertheless, no useful purpose will be served by killing this hard-working tax-gatherer.
He'd be dead. I call that useful.
There was some more of the same. Six beneficent winds jumped when the group broke up and the goat-faced man gave him a smile.
My humble friends are overawed by your... "'Variety of plum, small knife for cutting seaweed. "'Presence, noble sir,' he said, "'his every word slandered by Truckle's vigorous gesticulation behind his back.
"'How about if we just cut a bit off?'
"'What? "'How did you get in here?' said Six Beneficent Winds. "'There are many strong guards.'
"'I knew we missed something.' said Diamond Teeth.
"'We would like you to show us around the Forbidden City,' said Goatface. "'My name is Mr. Stuffed Tube, I think you would call it.
"'Yes, Stuffed Tube, I'm pretty sure.' Six beneficent winds glanced hopefully towards the door. "'And we are here to learn more about your wonderful mountain, variety of bamboo.' Sound of running water at evening? Drat. Civilization.
Behind him, Truckle was energetically demonstrating to the rest of the horde what he and Bruce the Hoon's skeletal raiders once did to a tax gatherer. The sweeping arm movements in particular occupied Six Beneficent Wind's attention. He couldn't understand the words, but somehow you didn't need to.
Why are you talking to him like that?
Genghis, I'm lost. There are no maps of the Forbidden City. We need a guide.
Goatface turned back to the taxman.
Perhaps you would like to come with us, he said.
Out, thought Six Beneficent Winds. Yes, there may be guards out there.
Just a minute, said Diamond Teeth as he nodded. Pick up your paintbrush and write down what I say.
A minute later they'd gone. All that remained in the taxman's office was an amended piece of paper, which read as follows. Roses are red, violets are blue. Seven lucky logs to be given one pig and all the rice he can carry, because he is now one lucky peasant. By order of Six Beneficent Winds, Collector of Revenues, Lang Tang. Help, help, if anyone reads this, I am being held prisoner by an evil eunuch. Help.